Mayor Don McCormick, one of my favorite composers is George Gershwin, who tells me that it's summertime and the living is easy. I like George Gershwin, but he may not have been right on point with that. How's the summer going in the year 2016 here in Kimberly, B.C.?
That's a great point, Paula. actually, the summer's going really well, but it's busy. And there's a tendency to believe that when the summertime comes, everybody goes on vacation or you kind of wind down a little bit. But it doesn't seem to be that way this summer. You know, things are continuing to be very busy.
What kinds of things?
Well, we've got kind of my favorite project is underway right now, the repaving of Jerry Sorensen Way.
Yes.
Which is taking up a little bit of my time.
800,000 people like that.
Yeah, and it's as with any major construction project, road construction project, there are those that understand that it needs to be done, but it impacts life. And so the phone is kind of ringing off the hook about, complaints about traffic on Norton Avenue, visitors to town can't quite find the golf course or the accommodation, the usual things that you would get despite the signage and, you know, people showing what's going on. So that's been a little bit of a challenge, but at the end of the day, we're only about, maybe 8 weeks away from having that thing completely done.
So that would be early September?
Probably mid-September, assuming everything goes well.
Well, that's so important because, as you have said repeatedly, that's what people see when they come to town because they're headed up the hill for the most part. And even if they're coming back down the hill to do things in either Kimberly or Marysville.
The biggest challenge so far early in the project has been with the mining railway. It was chosen to tear up that part of the road first or repair that part of the road first so that they could get back to, normal kind of business. So this last 3 weeks that it's been torn up has, I don't know how significant the impact has been, but it's definitely had an impact on their business. So we're hoping to, in fact, this week, I think we'll start to see the pavement go down.
Oh, great. That's, the third week in July now, something like that?
Yeah.
We've been doing some planting, and every now and then I will, as I'm digging up, I'll uncover some ants who take it amiss, and there's this huge scurrying and grab eggs and run, and it's a wondrous thing to watch. What makes me think of that? Most people assume summer gets quiet. Kimberly is the exact opposite, and part of it, of course, is the weather. People tend to be more indoors in the winter than in the summer. But it's like, when the sun comes out in the summertime, the whole community just explodes. It's everywhere, people doing things. Visitors are here. We've got the markets, July Fest. It's a wondrous thing to watch.
And then you add things like what you were talking about recently with the Professional Golf Association, the PGA, coming to town effectively and saying, Kimberly, British Columbia? Where's this kid? What?
Yeah, exactly. The golf tournament on the weekend, and the amazing performance of Jared Dutois, it literally stopped the community for 4 days. And Sunday was just a treat, an absolute treat. That young man performed incredibly well under kinds of pressure that we probably, as individuals, will never experience in our lifetime. And he performed in a way that reflected very positively on Kimberly, without a doubt. I think that was the big thing. Kimberly was mentioned a million times, over the national media, CBS, to the entire golfing community in North America. Yeah. However, I think the big thing was how Jared handled himself under pressure that really showed a reflection on the community that we can all be proud of.
In addition to all those festivals.
Well, and rule one is, did they spell the name right? Any publicity is good publicity, but to have it be a person who represents the community in a way that is, in fact, representative of the community and is positive.
Yeah. Well, and Kimberly is spelled L-E-Y.
it was awesome. There's just no other way to describe it. It was a great weekend. I can't imagine what it was like for his parents, Mike and Allison being there. It just must have been surreal.
That's my baby.
Yeah. So that was great.
And then all of the other things that happened during the summer really are quite impressive.
The events that we have going on in town, both in terms of number, quality of events, and the number of people they bring to town, has magnified over the last 5 years.
Does that make us a resort community?
Yeah, well.
A destination
that's
resort?
That's what the title says. You know,
yeah, but making it real is not trivial.
No, it isn't. It's difficult to do. And when you, with the increase in the events, you know, it also shows where the, you know, where the cracks are, you know, where the warts are, that we still need to work on things. And we've, you know, a few of those have shown up, and we're, you know, doing our best to try and plug those holes.
Is that all the city's responsibility? Is this all the city doing, or are you looking at all kinds of people getting involved? Is this a bottom-up as well as a top-down?
For sure. In fact, truth be known, aside from in-kind support for some of these events, at the end of the day, the city is really not on the radar screen for most of these, and that's the way it should be. The municipality shouldn't be responsible for, you know, doing a lot of those things. I mean, we have core services that we provide to the community, and we provide support for encouragement, endorsement, all of those kinds of things for other organizations in the community to be able to go and make things happen. So, for example, we have both the Chamber of Commerce and Tourism Kimberley that the city puts a lot of money into every year to be able to look after those kinds of things. You know, we have a number of other organizations in town, some of the service clubs and people like the Arts Council, that we provide grants for in order for them to be able to go and do the things that they do in the summertime. So we provide a lot of support in the background, but when it comes to actually doing the work, aside, as I said, from the in-kind that we budget for every year, we're in the background more than we are in the foreground.
This is essentially an exercise in making sure the infrastructure works.
Exactly.
And that it is sufficiently flexible and robust to be able to deal with the kinds of large numbers of people coming to town,
right,
making lots of demands on services.
That's exactly right, Bill. And if you go back over, say, the last 15 years, to the point where the mine, in fact, closed and the community became solely reliant on tourism, it's been a painful process, you know, to get to the point where we're at today. The infrastructure wasn't in place, and if it wasn't in place, it fell back on the municipality to mobilize some resources to make sure that, you know, those things were not covered up, but were taken care of. Otherwise, we risk not having, you know, the tourism thing work.
And if they don't come back,
if they tell
10 of their friends.
Yeah, exactly, Paula. Yep. So that remarkably has changed, you know, over this last probably 5 or 6 years, in truth, is where we've seen most of the change since Tourism Kimberley came into being in 2007, 2008. That was when the change really started. And today, those organizations, you know, carry the bulk of the work.
On the subject of infrastructure, we would be remiss not to talk about the role of the city in that, and the role, the current discussions going on between the city and its employees. Mm-hmm. Where are we?
Who make the infrastructure work?
Yes, indeed.
Particularly the critical infrastructure.
So that's a good question. The contract, the labor contract that we have through the steelworkers expired at the end of February the 29th. And since then, both the city management as well as the steelworkers have been in negotiation for a new contract. We've had a total of, I think, about 10 days of bargaining over that period of time, 10 complete days of bargaining. And we've also had several days of mediated bargaining in the last little while. And in fact, today is another day of mediated bargaining.
Today being the 27th of July.
Exactly. So we're making some progress. We don't have a deal yet, but you know, we're working very hard to come to an agreement with the union.
What are the core differences? I mean, this seems like a long time for a contract to be pending.
Well,
but I don't know that that is the case.
Yeah, it's probably not unusually long at this point, Bill. There are other municipalities our size in the province that have gone a year or a year and a half without a contract for a variety of reasons. So It's not that it's a a radical thing or that it's completely unusual, but it's a longer period of time than I think either the union or us would like to have seen. From my perspective, part of the issue, not talking about specific clauses or things in the contract, but from my point of view, we're in a position right now, we're in a situation right now where we need to look at today, 2016, and where we're going over the next 5 to 10 years. Everything we're doing right now is with efficiencies in mind, making sure that the money that we're spending is getting maximized so that it takes the pressure off the taxpayer. The more inefficient we are, the more we have to raise taxes in order to do the things that we need to get done. So efficiency and being very effective at what we do has been kind of the order of the day for the last, certainly for the last 12 to 18 months. So having said that, the contract that we have in place right now has built up over a long period of time, whether it's 20 years or 25 years or whatever, I'm not exactly sure, but it's been a long period of time. And so every 3 years or every 4 years, whatever the terms of those contracts have been, we've had things layered on top of the previous contract. And we get to the point here in 2016 where we have a number of things in the contract that don't work. And we need to change those in order for us to be able to manage the city in the most effective and efficient manner possible. And we're endeavoring to do that so that in a way that is not at the expense of the employees. So we've got a couple of different objectives that we're trying to manage to here. And, I believe that the offer that sits today is a pretty good balance of the two. Part of the problem is, from a philosophical point of view, unions generally don't like to take things out of contracts that have been negotiated in the past. And I understand that. I get that. But we also have to take a look at what the reality of our situation is in 2016 and say, how can we do this in a manner that's going to, win for the employees and the union and also for the city? And that's really where we're at with a number of issues on the table right now.
So this is still part of the legacy of a big company that left town?
Yeah, in many ways, actually. That's exactly right, Paula. I mean, if you go back to 1980, for example, or 1985 or 90, when the mine was still, very much a going concern, the city was competing for jobs. And if you compete for the same jobs with that organization, the wage scale and what you pay and the benefits and all of that have to reflect your ability to get, people. Yeah. And so here we are in 2016 with that mine having been closed for 15 years, and we're not competing for those resources anymore. So what we need to do is to take a look at any one of the jobs within the contract and say, what is that job worth in the open market? So let's take a look at municipalities that are of similar size or similar complexion to what Kimberley is. Let's take a look at what the average is for a particular job and compare that to what it is, we're paying today. And that's both in terms of wages and benefits and, the full meal deal.
This isn't just a local issue. Isn't this a bigger issue in the world at large?
It is. There was a time, I don't know, 2 or 3 decades ago, when people talking about governments talked a lot about, it was very trendy to talk about sunset legislation. That is, say you pass a law and at some point it comes to an end and you decide whether that law needs to be renewed or not.
Right.
And zero-based budgeting, which allows you to go back to zero and yep. build a new budget. Based on that, I think there's probably a reason that we don't hear much about that now. It's one of those things that looks good on paper. The reality of it is much more complex than that, mm-hmm. Because you're dealing with people's habits, expectations, mm-hmm. and what is functionally the embedded culture of the communities. That's essentially what you're dealing with, isn't it?
Well, and the other complexity that comes into play, when you have been a company town for such a long period of time and where that company has provided funds to, build facilities, sports facilities, and medical facilities, and all kinds of other things around town.
When you've had a company as long as this town is based on a company town, that's what the whole thing is about.
So where
was
I was
about
And what it does, it produces a culture of entitlement. Mm. And I'm not
that
saying
looks like the term, fighting words.
No, the term entitlement, I'm not talking about in terms of, I'm not in a negative term or anything. It's just when you are used to something, and if I've always had it, I should always have it.
Well, and if you're
right?
the town,
I'm entitled
and you should,
to have that.
And where's the company to fulfill right? the entitlement?
And as long as the company was here, there was a lot of that happening. And my observation would be that, you know, in any community, not specific to Kimberley, but in any community where that entity leaves, where that money leaves, you look for somebody to fill that void. And in most of the small communities, it ends up being the municipality that fills the void. And there's this tremendous pressure to continue to provide facilities, amenities. At the end of the day, in this day and age, at 2016, we can't do that anymore.
I grew up and much of my life was spent in what is now called the Rust Belt in the United States. And this is not just a small town in British Columbia facing these issues. These are big issues.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So, I mean, the reality is that, you know, we have to kind of look inward for really a made in Kimberley solution for this right now. We don't have too much experience to fall back on, and it's not exactly like we're making it up on the go. I don't want to make it sound like it's that ad hoc, but we have some goals and objectives that, when I say we, the council has goals and objectives that we set at the beginning of this term, our strategic priorities, and one of those is financial sustainability for the municipality. One of the ironies, you know, of a resort municipality like Kimberley, where we rely exclusively on tourism, is that when tourism is buzzing, when we've got people in town and businesses are full and everybody's feeling really good about the community, very much like we are right now, we've got a pretty good vibe going on in town. It's difficult to see the fact that the municipality, the corporation of the city of Kimberley, right, the organization, doesn't benefit from that in many, if any, direct ways. We function on taxes. And the more the business comes to town, the more pressure there is on our infrastructure and the city to support that infrastructure without any incremental revenue coming into the city. It's really an interesting really dilemma that resort municipalities have.
Well, I can hear people thinking, yeah, but I pay taxes.
The taxes are paid whether you have a massive amount of people coming into town or whether you have no one coming into town. Mm-hmm. The extreme example of this would be Tofino out on Vancouver Island. They have about 1,800 people, permanent residents in Tofino.
And glorious place.
They have built an infrastructure to support literally a few hundred thousand people coming to town. And who pays for that? How do you have 1,800 people, that's not even taxpayers, pay for the kind of infrastructure to, you know, keep that whole economy going?
And hopefully the province is part of that process.
Well, I would imagine to some degree. I mean, there is money that comes in from, you know, from the Resort Municipality Infrastructure Fund, but that fund was put together to build infrastructure, not to support it. And so,
maintenance.
You know, and I think what we're doing is we're evolving to a point in these resort municipalities where we want to build, you know, infrastructure so people will have a great experience and continue to come back, but maintaining it, the cost of maintaining it is fairly substantial. It's a really interesting dilemma.
Well, it's also important. I'm sorry. Important to remember that tourism is not, most people don't get rich in tourism. It does not provide a high level of payroll for the people who are supporting the tourism industry, which takes us back to the whole question of economic development. You've made progress. Is there anything to be said? Are we still looking out 3 to 5 years?
We're at 3 to 5 years. We have prospects that have come to the front that we are dealing with. You know, we've had at least two, actually three, proponents for solar farms that have come to town. One of which I've been trying desperately to find 100 acres within the city limits of Kimberley for them to be able to work on, but I haven't been able to, or we haven't been able to satisfy that as of yet. The significance of that, of course, is a couple of fold. And you never know where some of these things are going to lead.
Right.
The solar
farm, in
and of itself is no big deal. Okay, it's about a 20 to 25, maybe $30 million construction project, which is pretty big. I don't know the last time that Kimberley had a $20 million construction
project. But that's one-off.
But it's a one-off, exactly. So you get the initial construction. But what it does as you start to build one and two and three of these is you create a cluster.
And lots of power.
And once you have a cluster, you can then start going out to others in the industry, people or businesses that produce product and services, and start to attract them to come and locate near the cluster. There's a whole bunch of synergy that's involved in that. So what started out...
And it's all green.
And all of the environmental benefits, I mean, it's pretty awesome, really, if you can get this thing kind of going.
And it's not heavy industry, and it has lots of appeals.
And it's very high tech, you know, many aspects of it. So that's how it started with the Sun Mine, you know, which was really kind of a promotional opportunity.
And the city, by golly, said, we're going to do this.
And we've done it.
I mean to say the citizens, not just the city.
No, exactly. And we've got this momentum going, but trying to line up all of the varying forces that are required to move this thing forward is proving to be quite a challenge, despite how much sense it makes. We've got a lot of stakeholders that have to be on the same page. So that's one example of things
that are
being
worked on. And we had that experience with the Sun Mine itself. It was hard, and we got it done.
8 years.
Yeah.
Yeah, and we got it done.
It's also worth saying that Tesla is your ally.
Yep.
Yeah.
And for all Elon Musk can be a bit of a challenge, he is almost single-handedly redefining how we think about generating power and using power, specifically electricity.
When we desperately need those options.
It makes what the base we have with the Sun Mine, that makes these discussions possible, and it opens up avenues. And the problem, of course, is we're talking, unfortunately, leading edge, bleeding edge, and there is no roadmap. We're having to make this up.
It's true.
It was one of the absolutely defining criteria that drew us here.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have that kind of a something.
Yeah, no, I think, and you weren't alone, for
exactly.
sure, Paula. I think, you know, one of the challenges.
I was with him.
You know, timing and good luck are always your two best friends. And right now, and I guess depending on how you talk about timing, my time frames tend to be a little more compressed, you know, than others. But right now, BC Hydro, who we are selling the power back to, is in a situation here the last couple of years where demand is way down for a bunch of reasons, and capacity is way up. It's kind of the perfect anti-storm. And I think we're going to have some difficulty over the next few years trying to get, you know, through the standing offer purchase program, you know, enough capacity freed up to be able to even sell it back to the grid for a number of these things to even get going. This is something that's probably going to, I don't know, we're probably talking 10 years out before the situation is going to, you know, the pendulum will move the other way.
Back to that complexity thing.
So, so we have to kind of tiptoe through, you know, a couple of minefields here to get to where we want to go. But at least we're making some progress, and the vision is becoming more clear for what the opportunity is. It's not just this thing we have, but something much bigger than that. And there are, with respect to the other opportunities, there are probably a half a dozen that, you know, some small, some, you know, medium, some maybe a little bit larger that we're working with. And we haven't really even started to market or advertise our development initiative yet. We've got, we're in the process of hiring an agency to take the message that we have to the target market and kind of figure out what's the channel or which channels are going to be most effective at getting that message out.
What's the short definition of the target market?
Who are we going after?
Mm-hmm.
Well,
can
the
you
sweet
say?
Spot. Well, no, absolutely. The sweet spot is entrepreneurs in broad category, you know, the clean tech area, who have vetted their idea, probably some kind of manufacturing, high-tech manufacturing idea. They've already vetted the idea, proven that it is a viable idea, and they've already begun raising capital, as much as $10 million to be able to implement the idea. And they're at a point right now where in order to make this work, they have to choose, they're ready to choose, where's the location? And for the most part, if they're in Calgary, Edmonton, Vancouver, the Pacific Northwest, they're looking close to home because that's where they vetted the idea. So our challenge is to get in front of these people and explain to them that they can do it, you know, cheaper, quicker, better here than they can, you know, where they're at.
And besides, they can go outside and play.
And the whole lifestyle thing, not only for them, but for the employee base, you know, which theoretically means it's a much more stable employee base, mm-hmm. You know, is a big benefit as well. So that's the sweet spot. There are lots of other, you know, kind of tangential markets that we're looking at, but
well, and if you're out there, you're going to see things that you would not mm-hmm. otherwise see if you're not out there.
It's like the solar farm thing. Exactly. Once you get it in place, you start to see the possibilities. You know, you take that first step.
You know, I hadn't thought of that, and that could lead to something, and then
exactly
the only constant is change, and we have to live with that.
Yeah, in fact, I would suggest that rather than we have to live with it, we need to embrace it.
There you go.
And if we embrace it, good things are going to happen. In the world of startups today, particularly technology startups, but really in any startup, the philosophy on how that is done and what a business plan is today versus what it was even 5 or 10 years ago has changed fairly radically. And really the prevailing thought today is that all opportunities are iterative.
Hmm.
You don't try and guess where you're going to be in 5 years and put this 50 or 60
page
business plan together that has umpteen assumptions in it that after you test the first one, it throws the rest of them out. So it's a very iterative process that's going forward, and you test the hypothesis. And if the answer is yes, then you move to the next step. If it's no,
it's a fan.
You pivot and you
absolutely
see where it's going to take you.
Well, that's mature thinking.
Oh, this is actually real options,
which has been around for 25 years. But
well,
for people to really internalize it, that's great.
We're still dealing with net present value and trying to figure out exactly what's going to happen. I mean, this is the old mindset.
Yeah.
And the real options approach was always start. It's essentially
it's
what I think of is Chucky D approach, Charles mm-hmm. Darwin.
Yeah.
It's a Darwinian approach.
Instead of a Newtonian one.
Yeah,
where you have to know
absolutely.
This and this and this and this. Oh, that's good to hear.
Yeah, no, this is, and it's well ingrained. It's being taught out of the business schools at Stanford. And in fact, there's a fellow by the name of Steve Blank out of Stanford that is, you know, one of the fathers of the approach. And it works. I mean, this isn't radical. You know, this isn't radical. I mean,
this
it's common
life.
Sense.
It's life.
You just think about it, and it is very much common sense. The problem is
it's radical because we've never done it.
Yeah.
Well, that makes it hard.
It's uncomfortable for most people to do that. You know, you don't take a step until you know kind of what the next one is or the next one after that. And
that's not how you make progress.
It's the wrong approach. Absolutely.
We used to tell our clients, you know, this get a compass. Because you ain't got a roadmap.
That's right.
Yeah, bang on. Yeah, that's a great way to put it.
Like you know, that. Learn how to use the compass.
Yeah. And that's what I think with the whole Kimberly Cranbrook Development Initiative, that's really the philosophy. Because what we're going to do is we're going to get out there. We're going to follow up a lead. And that lead may go nowhere. But we're going to get referral, we're going to get comment and feedback from something that's going to take us down a slightly different path.
And you will be learning in the process. You will know more about the marketplace by virtue of being in it.
Back to my garden.
Building the knowledge base.
And then it goes this way, and then it goes that way, and I hadn't thought of that, and that butterfly just came. God, I hadn't seen a butterfly around here in years. And that butterfly then allows for us something. Mm-hmm. This is called natural everything. That's the way it is. Well, people say to me, why do you talk about Charles Darwin all the time? I say, well, it's a short course for life.
We're talking about an evolving ecology here.
Yeah.
It just happens with a specific focus on what appears to be economics.
Yeah. Yeah, I use the term iterative, mostly. And, as a salesman, if you don't behave that way, you can't be successful.
You won't be a salesman for long.
You can't be afraid of taking the step. Without knowing what that next one is. I always use the three door 1-2-3 analogy. You know, you have no idea what's on the other side of the door, but that's part of the excitement. You kind of make your best choice based on whatever your criteria is, and then, you know, make it happen.
And then something else will lead to something else. That's very exciting.
So the good news, though, is that from an elected official point of view, or from a mayor point of view, the minutia, that's Scott's job.
Exactly.
Right, and
let Scott handle it. Yeah, let Scotty handle it.
And this interesting stuff is kind of where I need to be, and it is for the most part working that way, and it's why it's so important that the CAO and the mayor, really work well together.